You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode number 24 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
I'm Tristan Carcino. I wanted to talk about 2 Chainz. I wanted to do a solid 35 minutes on 2 Chainz, but here's what I'm thinking. We do a full 2 Chainz cast, because he deserves it.
Am I really going to have much to contribute to the 2 Chainz cast?
You'll just throw out the questions.
Okay.
Maybe interject. add some color. You'll add some color when needed about 2 Chainz.
This just sounds a lot like a soliloquy.
A soliloquy. I'm going to need you to be there to break up the 2 Chainz comments and rants. It's all going to be a positive 2 Chainz cast, but I'm really interested in breaking down 2 Chainz lyrics.
All right.
And I feel like this is a really important time to do so.
Literally ones of readers or listeners are looking forward to that.
I think more people are looking forward to that than hearing about the NBA All-Star game.
I disagree.
You're probably right. But let's talk about your trip this last weekend to New Orleans and the NBA All-Star game.
Yes, it was a weird trip. So Tuesday I went to Portland for the Blazers game, drove back, got on a plane Wednesday morning, flew to Boston, went to the Celtics game that night, so 2 games, NBA games on opposite coasts within 24 hours of each other, and then spent a day on the ESPN campus in Bristol, and was luckily able to get out on Friday morning after the giant snowstorm that hit the Northeast, and made it to New Orleans at halftime of the rookie game on Friday night.
And you missed the riveting first half of the rookie game.
You know, they say that the first half of the rookie game is really the better half.
Did you also miss the All-Star Celebrity game?
I did, which I really wanted to see, because my man Zach Lowe, as we talked about last week, was coaching.
Oh, how did he do?
Well, they lost, so he's 0-1 all time.
But which team did he coach? Team?
Simmons.
Okay. But they had players. Oh, no, this was the celebrity game. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so I thought they had players.
That was Bill Simmons and Jalen Rose drafted out the teams, and then there was also a trade, and it was very convoluted. But despite Kevin Hart on their team, Arnie Duncan was just way too much in the celebrity game. They couldn't get the schemes going to double-team him and get the ball out of his hands. I mean, he's also a willing passer, Arnie Duncan, so.
Now, this is probably a more serious topic than the All-Star Celebrity Game or the Rookie Game. Well, so I was listening to Bill Simmons and Kevin Durant, a podcast that they did from the All-Star Game. And it just seems to me like Kevin Durant is such a changed human being.
But apparently Simmons was arguing that and he was disagreeing with it.
He was, but his whole demeanor felt different. You know, like Kevin Durant, when he was here especially, and it feels like from the last 3 years, is this excitable person who just loves to play basketball. He's really excited about it. And Bill Simmons was trying to like talk about what was different this year, and he was really like kind of cold, I would describe him. It feels like Kevin Durant has evolved into a superstar and has kind of like closed himself off in the world a little bit.
I don't get that sense. I mean, I understand what you're saying, and certainly on the court, I think there's been a change in his demeanor. He got a technical foul and was yapping throughout the Blazers game last
throughout
Tuesday.
Throughout the All-Star game?
Yeah. He was really heated in the All-Star game. It was weird because in the All-Star game, it was like, he was clearly trying to be the MVP, without question. Although, you know, like after the game, he was just like, I was just playing. But, but like, for example, after the All-Star game, he said in the post-game press conference that, you know, it was a great time, even though his team lost and he didn't end up getting an MVP. So I think what he's cold about is there's so much of this whole Russell Westbrook business and everything like that, people trying to psychoanalyze the Thunder, and he doesn't want people telling him how he should feel about himself and his team.
And he feels like there's a lot of that happening right now.
Yeah.
I think that there's also like a natural life cycle of an NBA superstar.
Yeah.
Right? And LeBron went through this, and LeBron is kind of on the other side now.
Without question.
And so LeBron went through this where
I remember with, like, probably his there was the period where he was cast as a villain. And for the most part, he didn't embrace that.
His first year in Miami.
The time he embraced it the most, I feel like, was in Portland. There was a game they won in overtime with a huge comeback that first season. It was, like, one of those moments where you saw, okay, this could be really special with these guys together. And he was definitely playing to the crowd that night. And so there was a little bit of a similar element from Durant.
I think that's what's going on with Durant right now, and it's a really interesting thing to kind of see it happening. Also because he's still so young, too. But him talking about...
Preposterously young.
Him talking about, like, his nicknames when he was saying... This was the interview where he called himself the Servant.
But this is the whole thing, is he doesn't... He still wants to be seen as...
Exactly. You know, so when he's saying, I'm the Servant, he's like, I serve everybody. I serve the ushers, I serve the fans, I serve my team. It's like, this positive thing that you would think of as, like, a really friendly NBA superstar. But at the same time, he's giving this, like, kind of cold interview and pushing back on everything. It was an interesting interview, I felt. It's being only 9 minutes long, also.
And the KD is not nice thing with Nike also plays into this, where for a while it was a joke, but then it kind of became Kitty on the Square. Like, yeah, you just got a technical. KD is not nice on the court.
That's an interesting thing that I think we should discuss more further, because this is the season of Kevin Durant evolving into, not necessarily a villain, but, like, this is his NBA season.
That's why I thought that it would have been really appropriate had he, you know, been able to break the scoring record, which he was 4 points away from doing, and win All-Star MVP. It would have just fit the narrative perfectly. Instead, Kyrie Irving won MVP, and I don't know what narrative that fits whatsoever.
Well, so that fits the narrative of LeBron is going to pair up with Kyrie Irving.
It does, although that's not going to happen.
You think that's preposterously true?
I thought it was definitely a possibility before the season, and especially, you know, after they won the lottery, I thought it was possibly even a likelihood, even more than a possibility. But just they've mismanaged their roster and their season too much. LeBron's not going to play for a team that's below 500.
What if Kyrie Irving were to, if he were somehow to orchestrate Kyrie Irving going to a different team? It would be so impossibly difficult.
Yeah, that's way too many moving pieces at this point.
Yeah. Okay, so what else from All-Star?
So New Orleans is a great place for an All-Star game. It's the only place I've been to the All-Star game, as we discussed last week. Both I've been to have been in New Orleans. But it's obviously New Orleans, in any scenario, is a constant round-the-clock party. Then you throw in All-Star on top of that, and it just adds to it.
There's insanity down there?
Yeah, I mean, I only got to Bourbon Street, really. I just walked by to get a sense of it on Saturday night to see if it matched my recollection from 2008, where it was just wall-to-wall people. And you couldn't actually get to Bourbon Street. Like, I had to walk across the intersection and view from afar how many people were there. And this was, you know, well into the evening, and I'm sure the party continued going for many hours after that.
How late do people party in New Orleans? Does it die in the mornings?
Couldn't tell you for sure, but I'd imagine it's very late. Oh, like when I was walking back to my hotel that night after that scene.
Do bars close in New Orleans?
There's not a closing time that I found. But when I was walking back to my hotel, the Diddy party was right kind of next to my hotel in this old mill that's been repurposed, like a lot of the buildings there. And that was still going strong at the time I was.
I feel like the Diddy party went till 8 a.m.
I think 8 a.m. is probably a stretch.
That's too far.
That's
Diddy might not have been there the whole time, but people were there for a long time. And you didn't go to the Diddy party?
I didn't have an invite. The only thing I had an invite to was the John Wall party on Sunday after the game that John Wall apparently did not attend. They were just using his name. But there were tons of VIP tickets to that littered around the streets.
The only party you were invited to is the one that the tickets were littered throughout the streets.
That's it.
So what about All-Star Saturday night? I think that's kind of actually kind of the cornerstone of the All-Star weekend now.
I mean, the fact that Kendrick Lamar performed there kind of indicated that. Yeah, it's the dunk contest at some point kind of outgrew the game itself. And
wait,
now it's complaining about the dunk contest.
That is an important thing to do. You think that Kendrick Lamar performing on Saturday night means that that's the, like, main event of All-Star weekend? Because Pharrell is still more famous than Kendrick Lamar.
He is, but it... Like, the term that I think Eric Freeman, my friend, used on Twitter was cultural touchdown.
Kendrick Lamar is the cultural touchdown?
Yeah, like, he's the one who really, like, obviously everyone loves Pharrell.
I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, Kendrick Lamar is...
But Kendrick Lamar is more in the moment.
How are you saying that anybody is more in the moment?
I don't know. I mean, it's true.
The person who had, like, three of the top songs of last summer.
Including the one we
read. No one is more in the moment than Pharrell.
It's valid, but...
I don't really see any argument how you
just
can
because
make
of the
argument.
Fact that Pharrell is not as new and fresh as Kendrick Lamar.
I don't know if I agree with this. But what did you think of Kendrick Lamar live?
I thought it was really good. It was kind of a weird experience, the musical acts, because the way it set up was they had the stage directly in front of the media, so we were looking kind of behind through lights and the stage itself and everything. It's kind of a limited view.
I really don't like rappers with live bands. That's something that I'm not particularly interested in seeing. And Kendrick always plays with a live band. I've seen him twice, both times.
He really must have been really upset about the Imagine Dragons collaboration.
Yeah. Both times that I've seen Kendrick Lamar is in Key Arena, which is kind of notable for not sounding very good.
Yeah, and New Orleans Arena is not, I don't think, a whole lot better. Like, a lot of the times you couldn't hear the vocals almost at all.
So I've missed him. He's performed a few times in Seattle that I haven't gone. He played at the Neptune, which I'm sure would have been really good, and then he played at UW also. But I didn't go to either of those times. I've just seen him at Key Arena, and it's been kind of terrible every time. Our cousin Katie was saying when we were watching Kendrick on Saturday that she's confident he's going to release a rap rock album at some point.
That might actually make rap rock, that actually might be terrible because it might bring it back.
I know. There's nothing good that can come of that. Even if Kendrick Lamar is involved, nothing good can come of that.
Even if it's good, it will still be a long-term negative.
Okay, and so how about the three-point shootout? This is your second three-point shootout attending?
Yeah.
Is there energy for that in the building?
Depends. When someone gets going, like the end of Beal when he made his final six shots to tie...
I stood up.
Marco Bellinelli, there was a lot of energy on that. And then the end was kind of anticlimactic because Bellinelli did so well in his final round, the tiebreaker, that there was no chance
of Beal. It felt like the whole crowd was cheering against Marco Bellinelli.
I don't know that I got that sense. I don't know that I got the sense that people really cared. They just wanted to see something exciting.
I got the sense that Nelly really cared about Bradley Beal winning.
Well, they grew up, you know, they knew each other. There were some good Beal plus Nelly equals Bellinelli jokes on Twitter.
Well, good jokes. but it felt like the energy from Bellinelli was really low during that time period. Also, he's just not a star player, you know?
No.
And were there really no real star players were in contention because Kevin Love was already out and Lillard was already out.
Yeah.
And Joe Johnson was the worst ever.
Joe Johnson, well, Sam Perkins probably had the worst three-point shootout ever.
Do you think Joe Johnson had the worst All-Star weekend ever?
That's quite possible. I mean, I was doing grade throughout the weekend for ESPN.com, and I graded an F for his performance in the All-Star shootout where he left three or four shots untaken, didn't come close to finishing the round.
I like when you say that because I like to imagine it as him just not taking the shots. Yeah. Not that he ran out of time. He's like, I'm good. I don't need that one.
I'm not going to the next round. Who cares? I mean, Sam, I think, may have gotten only through three racks, I think, because he's such a slow shooter.
And Big Smooth are so different.
They are. Like, it made sense that Sam was like
that. He should have just never been in the three-point shootout to begin with.
It was a bad idea, as fun as it was. But Johnson, like, he could, in theory, have done okay, but he just did not seem to care whatsoever. Like, you know, let someone else take your spot. And then he got a D for his performance at the All-Star game, where he shot 2 of 7, including 1 of 6 from three. I thought it was funny that all the guys that struggled in the shootout, Steph Curry, we didn't mention, Love... Oh, yeah. And Johnson all eliminated in the first round. None of them could make a three on Sunday night in the actual game.
That's really strange.
Steph Curry was 2 of 11. He had 11 assists. So it's like he was like the Ricky Rubio of the All-Star game. Yeah,
that's really weird. And then what about the dunk contest? This year I went in with a lot of expectations for the dunk contest.
Well, the field was great. The format was incomprehensible. Like the... warm-up round or the freestyle round or whatever it was, like, you know, it was totally inconsequential. And then no one really understood the rules for the battle round. But the dunks themselves, I think, were pretty good in there. I would hold up, you know, I think the top three dunks. I think all of the East's dunks would stand with anything from, you know, the last couple of years of the competition.
Yeah, I thought that the dunks were fine. I mean, the constant complaint is that people miss the dunks and get all the opportunities. And John Wall's dunk, maybe it wasn't the best dunk of the dunk contest. The dunk that basically ended it all.
Yes.
But he hit it on the first time.
Exactly.
So it was so much better.
Yeah, I mean, I think Paul George, if he had been able to pull off the dunk that he was trying... He softened it up, made it a little easier to finally put it down on his last try before he would have been eliminated. If he had hit that on the first try, would have been better than Wall's dunk. But yeah, I think that excitement of not knowing what's going to happen and then having it happen and being completed is the best possible scenario. And it was good that was the last dunk because it proclaimed Wall won. But and sometimes you have it end on like an anticlimax when there's two dunks in the finals and someone has a really good first dunk and a mediocre second dunk. So you'd hate to see that. But no one knew it was over.
No, I was really waiting for the dunk off between the three East competitors.
Which would have been good. I'm sure they left some good stuff on the table.
The three best dunkers who were there, all from the East, and they never got a chance to dunk against each other. And that was really what people wanted to see. It's what I wanted to see. I think John Wall probably already had his best dunk. Paul George and Terrence Ross might have been able to do something more interesting. I think
that's definitely a possibility.
Terrence Ross should have sent Drake into the crowd and had Drake alley-oop the ball to him.
That would have been pretty amazing. I don't know how Drake is as a passer. We saw a lot of
that. Probably feels very confident in his passing ability.
I doubt it. He started from the bottom. Now he's up in the crowd.
Zing. I thought it was really funny also during All-Star Weekend, and this was during the game and on Saturday night, that like they would show Drake, and then they would have to show one of the Raptors players. It was like DeMar DeRozan is so linked with Canada now.
Yeah, that's... They showed him during the
during the Canadian national anthem. They showed DeMar DeRozan as if he's like
Steve Nash.
Yeah, I think they're just excited that there's somebody, a Raptors representative there
for sure. Who did you think was the best of the West dunkers?
Definitely not Harrison Barnes.
No, I don't have no idea why Harrison Barnes decided.
I really don't know. I mean, I thought Ben McLemore's dunk over Shaq was okay. The whole presentation of it was pretty good.
There was too much presentation and not enough actual dunk.
But him just jumping over Shaq. I mean, John Wall, as they said, jumped much higher than Ben McLemore.
In the D-League dunk contest, which I went to earlier today, besides seeing lobs from a variety of locations off the court.
And they used an actual fan, right?
Yes, at one point. But also, the most impressive one was Giannis Antetokounmpo's little brother plays in the D-League.
Really?
He's
going to
be eligible for the draft next year and will probably get drafted.
Is he a freak of nature like Giannis is?
Not quite as much, but I mean, the whole family is pretty freakish. So he dunked over Giannis.
Oh, man.
Giannis ducked down and he kind of lifted off his back. So he wasn't like completely jumping over 6'11", but it was much higher than even Wall jumped.
Still, I would like to see that.
Exactly. The D-League dunk contest, really underrated.
Okay, here's an idea. NBA versus D-League.
That's been thrown out a lot, and I think it would work pretty
NBA
well.
NBA players would never commit to doing that, though.
But that's the thing. Like, people are always talking about, they need bigger stars in the dunk contest. Like, yeah, obviously it's fun because you know them. But the best dunkers are not the best players. The best dunker is some guy you've never even heard of.
That's
kind of the problem with the dunk contest, is we know too many amateur dunkers now that can do all sorts of crazy
stuff.
The
best dunkers are on the
Animal Tour. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you need better players. It would be exciting if LeBron participated. But really, the best way for the best dunkers is to release these little videos to kind of tease you with their dunking, like LeBron did last week or a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And then you can kind of edit it. So let's say LeBron probably missed one of those dunks at some point. But you're only going to show the ones that he hits, right?
Yes.
And that's what the best dunker should be doing. Or Paul George, who had probably the best in-game dunk maybe ever.
Yeah. Yeah, that was definitely up there. The other format I'd consider for the dunk contest, which, and I don't think it can be saved, quote-unquote, because, I mean, the problems are, A, dunks are increasingly difficult, so you're going to miss them more often, and B, everyone is nostalgic about the past.
And there have been too many dunks.
And there have been too many dunks. The one thing I would like to see is a round where you try to dunk on someone. We bring out Timofey Mozgov. You're thinking of Frederick Weiss on the Vince Carter dunk? Yeah, we bring out someone like that, and they're trying their hardest. We give them an award for whoever has the best block of a dunk.
I feel like there would be somebody who would do that, especially if they're like fringe. Maybe they're playing in Europe.
It would be awesome, because those are the best dunks in games. Other than that Paul George one, usually it's not trick dunks in games. It's when you get somebody.
It would also be exciting to see those guys block somebody.
I know. It adds a real element of drama to the proceedings.
Like, if they just stuffed Paul George, that would be so exciting. It's like a hockey shootout, basically.
And then they start giving them a tumbo.
Maybe
you know?
Increasingly better big players would want to do it, too. You'd have, like, Roy Hibbert down there. I think that would be kind of awesome.
Let's get this going. Let's get this out there, starting with the Pelican
But they
cast.
Definitely need a final round. The battle round, I thought battles were good.
Yeah, I think if the whole thing should be a battle round.
Yeah.
Like an 8-player bracket, everyone goes head-to-head.
I don't like that it's... And I think they do this way too much in All-Star Weekend. I mean, I understand the game doing it. But dividing it by conference doesn't really make any sense. There's not, like, hatred between the two conferences, you know?
Yes.
It's not like the AFL and the NFL or something, which would be really cool if it was like two completely separate things and they were going against each other, but the conferences are basically the same.
Exactly.
So I didn't like how they divided it that way.
Yeah. I mean, they're definitely trying stuff, so maybe eventually they'll hit on something that really works. Maybe the battle round is it.
So then what about the All-Star game itself?
I thought it was pretty good. I know you were kind of disappointed in it in talking to you, but...
I was most disappointed with the jerseys.
You know, I didn't even notice the jerseys that much, so
they're
I guess they
horrendous. As somebody who cares at least a little bit about nice design, I was very upset with how terrible those jerseys were.
No, you were more upset with the actual design than the sleeves, right?
I don't really care about the sleeves. I was more worried with the graphic design of the, like, Saints logo that they had, the fleur-de-lis.
They called it, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was weird to not have the number, like, prominently on in front.
I thought the colors were really strange. I think the best jerseys are when they do classic, like, blue and red, west and east, really big across there. You know that, like, star pattern that they do, like, west with the, like, silver and white lining around it?
Yeah.
Those are the best jerseys that they can do.
But did you like that they were Seahawks colors?
The east jerseys?
Yeah. A lot of comments about that on Twitter.
I don't think that I cared. It's not like seeing the Seahawks color pattern really excites me in any case.
That was a fun thing about being on the ESPN campus, is that, you know, there were a variety of presentations during my day there, and everybody kept using the Seahawks as, like, slides or, you know, just photos or references, and it's great.
It's actually pretty interesting. I mean, I don't want to devolve into talking about the Seahawks again, but the Seahawks are like...
would we devolve or would we evolve?
They're like an archetype-type team, right? Every team thinks of themselves or wants to
think
of themselves.
Well, the whole Pacers?
Yeah, the Pacers are like, we're like the Seahawks, which is actually kind of true when you think about
it. It's very true. I wish I would have thought about it, since no one should recognize that more than me.
But at the same time, the Seahawks are like one of those teams where it's not like, oh, they just won the Super Bowl. They won the Super Bowl and they, like, created the model for teams that want to win the Super Bowl in the future.
Or any other sports championships.
It's really strange, and they have such strong personalities. It's just like, the Seahawks are sport right now. You know? But I was actually saying to you that my interest in basketball, and the NBA in particular, is at an all-time high for this season.
That's not really that. You can't say all-time high for me. That's the season high. That's the term.
It's at a season high. After the All-Star game, I went, and I'd already had NBA 2K14 or whatever, but I hadn't really played it. You know, I was busy not playing video games. I don't know. But I picked up NBA 2K and started playing that, and now I've been playing it every night for two straight nights.
So what did you think was the best part of the All-Star game?
What did I think was the best part of the All-Star game? I thought that Pharrell's introduction was really good.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's true.
It lasted for an incredibly long time.
So long! Like, I thought he was done playing when they started introducing the players, and I was kind of disappointed, but...
It was like a career retrospective of
it Pharrell. It was!
There were songs that he produced on there. Was there a song that he had produced that he didn't even sing on? I don't think so.
I'm not that much of an expert in the Pharrell catalog.
Did they play Grindin' at some point? I think
they did. That. Well, they did that as the instrumental over yeah. the under the East.
It was
Lofters.
Basically like Pharrell Williams.
This is your life. Yeah, and the hat made it come back.
That was pretty exciting. Arby's style hat. So I think that that was a really really great moment. At the end of the game, so basically the All-Star game comes down to one or two plays. The whole game doesn't really matter. You're going to see some riveting dunks, and you're going to be thrilled by them for the moment, but then they're gone, and they don't really mean anything, and you don't even really see the highlights from them in the future. It's just like, oh, Blake Griffin made an exciting dunk.
Which I think we're kind of taking it for granted a little bit. But
that's what you do in the All-Star game, right? Especially because Blake Griffin made so many exciting dunks. But what you want in the All-Star game is you want the best player on one team, the best player on the other team, Kevin Durant, LeBron James, one or two plays to decide the game. And unfortunately, that didn't really happen, partially because of Kevin Durant missing shots to right. make that situation not happen. Durant wasn't good enough at the end to make that moment happen.
Right, I mean, we had the anticipation of there's a timeout with, what, like, I think a little under a minute left yeah. after Paul George was fouled, shooting a three and made all three shots.
Which I thought was a very strange call.
Was it not actually a foul?
Well, just I don't know also having a foul, like, majorly influence the All-Star game.
It is very odd. I mean, that can only happen in the fourth quarter. But anyway, I think it was actually the next play after that. They're down four, and they set up Durant on a down screen. And he got a pretty good look at a three from the top of the key, but he just couldn't knock it down.
Yeah. Well, I think the most exciting moment of the actual basketball, of the non-Pharrell action, I guess the most exciting moment was when Snoop Dogg came out.
It was pretty exciting. I think I may have yelped a little bit in the media section.
Is that what you did? Oh! It's Snoop Dogg?
I wasn't an old Southern woman.
Oh, golly gee. But the most exciting basketball moment was the short stretch in the fourth quarter when Durant went directly at LeBron. It was like, come here, you're going to defend me.
There was also at the end of the first half, LeBron ISO'd Durant, and then he bricked a three.
LeBron didn't do that well when he was ISO'd against Durant. That's not his game in the same way. You know, LeBron is not a, like, one-on-one, I'm going to score against you player in the same way that Durant is.
No.
You know, so he...
But it was just had an off night in general. It was not a good game for LeBron.
LeBron was trying the hardest of anybody, I felt. It seemed, even from the very first moment, like, he got that steal right to begin the game.
And Joakim Noah was trying pretty hard.
Yeah, there were definitely a lot of players who were trying hard. Obviously, Kyrie Irving was.
But he mostly was trying hard in the fourth quarter. And that's the thing is, everybody tries hard in the fourth quarter.
A close game. LeBron was trying hard the whole game.
No, he definitely was. Yeah, I mean, I thought he also came out with the mindset of, like, I'm going to reestablish these guys. Like, hey, Durant's had a nice run here, but I'm still the guy.
It's a weird thing where, like, players want to establish their pecking order in the NBA. The All-Star game.
I mean, first off, yeah, it's a huge narrative point, which is weird because it doesn't really mean anything.
And it's gone. Like, it's in your mind.
It's fleeting.
I don't think that it matters to, like, NBA journalism or to general thought about the NBA more than that night. Maybe the 2 days after.
But I think you can leave a sense. And what makes this interesting right now is there's this time period where, for the first time since... I know, at least since LeBron won his first title, that is an open question, who's the best player in the NBA.
It's true.
Because, you know, in 2011, maybe you could have had some crazy people that said Kobe still.
Mm-hmm.
But after LeBron won that title and was the best player in the Olympics, and I guess it was 2012, then you could not possibly say anyone other than LeBron until their game last month.
And he feels a little bit defensive about it, too.
Oh, you know, for sure.
LeBron clearly wants to be considered the best player in the league. I don't know. I mean, Kevin Durant is the best offensive player in the league. And the people are probably overvaluing that. But LeBron is probably still the best complete player in the league.
I don't know. I mean, he's, without question, KD has had the best season.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else is even close. We talked about the statistics last week.
Mm-hmm.
And with LeBron coasting on defense, I don't think he has as much of an advantage there as he had in the past. And Durant is not a bad defender by any stretch of imagination. He's not a bad passer. He's very good at all these things. It's just LeBron is otherworldly at them.
Yeah, but they definitely did want to establish themselves. And there's a big game coming up right after the All-Star game also, right?
Is it this Thursday?
And who's that?
Heat Thunder.
Heat Thunder coming up right after that. Basically what a lot of people would consider NBA Finals preview. And so that game is going to mean a lot more to the dialogue than the All-Star game. You know, it's like we didn't really get to see LeBron and Durant match up against each other in the All-Star game in any exciting way. But we're going to get it in 3 days.
But I think that could have set the tone if one of those guys had really... stood out over the other.
Yeah, I mean, the dialogue is going to set the tone. There is so much conversation about it. It's like LeBron, Durant, LeBron, Durant. That's the NBA conversation right now.
So that's going to be a pretty good one. Yeah, I got to...
That's going to be a pretty good one. That'll be a pretty good game.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to make it...
Mark your calendars, children.
Here. No, I got to be finished with my trade deadline grades because Thursday is the trade deadline.
So you got trade deadline and then one of the best games of the year.
That's a pretty solid week. And I'm going to be in Portland again this week, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, to see 3 games as the Blazers kind of try to get going again.
Yeah, hopefully that All-Star break will have helped them out. You know, Damian Lillard was in everything, but I don't know if it necessarily did. He was being discussed. But it definitely wasn't like a Damian Lillard coming out party in probably the way that he was expected.
Yeah, like we talked about last week, even though he won one of the events.
I don't even remember LaMarcus Aldridge playing in the All-Star game.
We were discussing this during the game. I think LaMarcus Aldridge might be the worst All-Star player. So, like, he's good in real games, but put him in the All-Star setting, and he's 4 of 16 in his career. So, guys, he's played multiple games. Like, I don't know if anyone has been worse in All-Star relative to real life.
Was Tim Duncan on the team? Did he play?
This year?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
He was not. He was on the team last year. Dirk, I think, is who you're thinking of, who only played
Tim
the first
Duncan
half.
Didn't make the All-Star game?
He didn't.
Wow. I kept looking for him. This did DeMar DeRozan play? It just felt like there were so many players who just didn't even play.
And that was interesting. This year, more than any other year, I think the minutes heavily tilted toward the starters. Like, guys played 33 minutes in the game.
Yeah, it was really like those players were in there.
Yeah, it was very unusual. But I think that You know, I mean, frankly, it's probably a better viewing experience.
Maybe. Is there money that the players get for winning or losing also?
I would guess so, but I'm not sure if the shares are different.
Because I do think that what the NFL did this last year with the Pro Bowl, and I'm not saying that they should draft out teams or whatever, because I think the way that they select teams is fine for the All-Star
drafting
games.
Teams would be pretty good. It would work better in basketball than any other sport.
But
because that's who we're used
really
to on the playground.
Incentivizing it, I do think would be a little bit more fun.
I don't want guys to play hard the first three quarters.
A little bit harder. Mildly.
I'm fine with it.
Mildly harder would be so.
But it was testing Frank Vogel's soul on the side.
Especially, yeah, Frank Vogel wanted to coach. At the end of the game, he was getting fired up.
He was only, you know, we didn't get him in arena, so we were only seeing the tweets of what he was being said on TNT.
I thought there was another interesting thing. I saw on your Twitter that there was a conversation about teams tanking and players not tanking.
Yes.
And I thought that the All-Star game was kind of an interesting example of that. Like, this is a game that, for all intents and purposes, doesn't matter at all.
Yes.
Like, to Joakim Noah, this game means nothing. But that every player was trying so hard at the end of that game. You know, they really wanted to win. The West was playing to win the game more than a lot of other teams play to win the game. They played to win the game more than the Huskies played to win the game against Cal on Saturday.
I mean, I think that coaches sometimes talk about this in the preseason. If they're going to keep score, we should try to win.
Exactly.
So
I definitely felt like that was like
a good example.
Yeah, demonstrative of like players are trying to win the game.
Yes, although, as I noted on Twitter, I can't agree with Adam Silver's statement that he's never seen evidence of teams intentionally trying to lose a game, because the Minnesota Timberwolves once had Mark Madsen attempt 7 threes in a game.
Do you think they told him to?
I think they told him he could. I mean, I don't think he had to be, like, prodded to shoot 7 threes. Everyone wants to shoot 3. Like, another tweet I had over the weekend.
Hey, Mad Dog, explore the floor.
Like, when they were doing Around the World or something, three-point shooting drill in the West practice, like, Dwight Howard wants so bad to be a good three-point shooter. Like, he's worked so hard on his form. He's got the follow-through and everything. Like, there is nothing in my life I want as badly as Dwight Howard wants to be a three-point shooter, and it's just not happening.
Every player wants to shoot threes and wants to dunk.
And every rapper wants to play basketball, and every basketball player wants to rap.
Somehow being an actor is all muddled up in there, too.
Yep.
Every rapper wants to be an actor also. How was the crowd? That was a question.
It was okay. I mean, it's weird because it's kind of like suits in the 100 level and then, you know, the 200 level. The upper deck isn't always even necessarily full. It was very empty even on Saturday night.
I thought that the dunk contest in particular, that the crowd was really not into it.
I think that was a lot to do with the format. But no, definitely not as much as the last time I was there. The last time I was there was the Dwight Howard Superman pseudo dunk. And the crowd was really into that one.
I mean, it's more exciting when the crowd gets into it. There is no real time.
Oh, yeah, you gotta have the atmosphere.
Where the players were freaking out. You know, the only time was really that wall dunk at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even some of the good dunks were kind of just brushed by.
We also maybe needed a hype man there, like, to just be, you know, like, it's over!
So that's what you want?
Yeah. Hype man.
Hype man. Not Nick Cannon. There's a lot of negative criticism for Nick Cannon.
Oh, Nick Cannon was Nick Cannon.
People were not very happy with Nick Cannon. It felt like people were not happy with anything all around. Deadspin was really upset with Aloe Black and thought he had such a terrible performance.
Yeah, I didn't see anything about that because I was making my way to the game at that point. But I think that that's part of it. Is like the best thing about All-Star Weekend is complaining about how terrible All-Star Weekend is.
But again, I think I enjoyed it more than I have in a long time.
Like someone said to me on Twitter on Saturday night, because I was complaining about the format of the Shooting Stars or something.
Uh-huh.
I don't even know anymore. Like, you sound like you hate All-Star Weekend. It's like, no, I love All-Star Weekend. But the best part about it is complaining.
Well, that's exciting. Here's to not talking about All-Star Weekend again, though, after this.
We should talk about food quickly.
Okay.
So I hit up this place, Cochon Butcher. There's a fancy restaurant, a sit-down restaurant, Cochon. And then they've also got, like, a deli next door, which is all I had time for. Phenomenal. So go there if you're ever in New Orleans.
And you had a po' boy?
They don't have po' boys. I had mac and cheese.
Really?
The po' boy, I went to Mulates, which is down the street from the convention center. There are probably a million places that you could go, but phenomenal.
Is there a lot of street food in New Orleans? Seems like there would be.
No, I was wondering about that. There was one place I kind of thought was street food, but yeah, I didn't see very much of it.
Because in
it seems like a perfect place for it, but maybe there's just so many restaurants that they don't even need it.
In Austin, I'll report back for this from South by Southwest. There's so much street food.
It seems like it would go well with your ability to drink on the street.
Yes.
That seems like a great combination right
there. Yeah, because in Austin, you can't drink on the street. Maybe at South by Southwest, sometimes you can, depending on
the
what's
rules
going
get
on.
Relaxed.
But I think there were people drinking on the streets at various times, and they do shut, or you can on one part of the street because they shut down the road.
Yeah.
But it's constant street food. I don't think I eat a meal indoors.
That seems like the way to go, especially if it's nice outside, because I didn't want to sit inside.
What's the point of being undercover if it's sunny outside?
Yeah.
We live in Seattle. This is the worst.
Yep.
I don't ever want to be indoors.
I was trying to spend as much time outside as possible, partially by walking everywhere. Anyway, the other thing that I did not do in 2008 was sample the local Abita beer.
And how was that?
Pretty good.
I've never heard of it.
So their amber is their specialty.
Abita?
Yeah.
How's that spelled?
A-B-I-T-A.
Huh.
But the other thing I had was Purple Haze, which I had to order because, you know, Husky football, Purple Haze,
uh-huh.
Hendrix, everything.
Uh-huh.
And it's like raspberry infused, and it was really, really good.
That's a beer?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Raspberry infused beer? I have to say, that sounds kind of terrible.
I know that you don't like any beers with fruits in them. I think if done well, it's very good. If done poorly, it's terrible. But if done well, it's good. All right, well, now it's part two of the Fabulous Peloton Cast. Combined together, but coming to you live from the recording studio at the Vera Project here on the Seattle Center campus.
Here we are. I had to come to work in between recording. We're preparing for the Viva Vera Gala coming up on Saturday, which is an event that a lot of people in Seattle say is the event of the year.
Which people?
A lot of Seattle music people. Steven Severin, who owns Numos, called it that not too long ago. Notable people. You made it seem like it was like crazy people.
Well, no, but just because a lot of...
like, quote Tristan Carcino, the event of the year.
Well, that's it's a weasel world word. A lot of people are saying passive voice. Anyway, I think that there's no question, having seen some of the items up for bid in the auction, that there's... it's a big event.
We have some awesome stuff this year, and it actually overlaps with sports more than this auction ever has, which is kind of strange. We have a ball signed by Felix Hernandez, which is pretty cool because he dated it when he won a Cy Young and then also when he pitched his perfect game. And then that comes with four tickets, four box seats to Mariners opening day.
Nice.
Which is awesome. We also have... like a specialties pack from Macklemore, who also does an item, a thrift shopping trip with Macklemore, which is a really cool item.
Yeah, I mean, that you literally can't get it anywhere else unless you just happen to be in Goodwill at the right time.
And go up to him. I feel like he wouldn't be that receptive to that. But then also he gave like a rarities package of all of Macklemore's merch from the last 4 years or so. And then an LP, which is vinyl, which is not available in stores of the Heist. And then the coolest thing is a Macklemore Sonics jersey that says Sonics on the front and says bring him back on the back. And he signed that.
I know, that's something I would want.
That's an awesome jersey.
Yeah.
And then also we have, and I think this is the coolest new thing that we have, is a football signed by Richard Sherman. And then the flag that flew on top of the Space Needle on the Blue Friday before the Super Bowl.
That's pretty cool.
The best luck blue or 12th man flag
that
there is. There couldn't be a better one. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to that event coming up. And thank you so much to the Seahawks for giving those items. The Space Needle actually gave us the flag. And then Macklemore, who's been really generous, donating a couple items to the Vera Project.
And the
Mariners. That's really cool. And the Mariners also.
So are those official Fabulous Peloton Cast shout-outs?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'd give an official Fabulous Peloton Cast shout-out to Macklemore any day, anytime.
I'm with you on that, okay.
But maybe later we should discuss the Kendrick Lamar, Drake, Macklemore situation. Because I think that there are a lot of people wrong in that situation.
That might need an entire podcast of its own to unpack.
But wanted to talk about Husky basketball.
So while I was busy in New Orleans attending to the D-League All-Star game on Saturday afternoon, you were at the Husky-Cal game. Making good on the promise made right here on the Peloton Cast last week.
Nostra Tristan strikes again. So I predicted that the Huskies would win on Wednesday against Stanford. And I said if
True.
They won... I would go to the game on Saturday against Cal. All of this happened. And then it came to... I waited a long time to buy the tickets because I wasn't that excited about it. And so it came to the Friday before the game, and I decided to go on to GoHuskies.com, assuming that there would be tickets for $20 or something like that. The cheapest ticket that the Huskies sell for basketball is $32.
I would like to give an official Fabulous Pelton Cast shout down to the Husky basketball office for outpricing themselves out of fans.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you look at the crowds this season, they have been, let's say, disappointing. To me, my philosophy has always been that if you have a choice between making the same amount of money or even slightly more money with higher ticket prices and making that same amount or slightly less with lower ticket prices but more volume, you have to take the more volume because it helps create the home court crowd.
There's no atmosphere whatsoever. But so I went on to Craigslist and various third-party ticket sellers looking for tickets because I was buying two tickets, right? And I didn't want to spend $60 to go and watch a crappy basketball team play, right? It was not worth $60.
You're evidently not alone in that opinion.
Clearly. I would have been $64. There might have been surcharges on top of that. Almost $70 to go and watch 2 hours of bad basketball.
The thing that stands out to me is there's often a lot of criticism about the ticket prices of NBA teams.
Mm-hmm.
But the NBA has mandated that you make available a certain number of $10 tickets.
Well, so here's an interesting thing, right? Is because nobody really is caring about these games, there's no third-party tickets available. People either have bought these tickets and are going, the few, the proud, or they're not buying tickets at all and they're just owned by the Husky ticket office and they're doing nothing with them, right? They're clinging to these empty tickets, and we're talking thousands of tickets. You know,
yes, we often are.
There were the top six rows all the way around the arena were wide open, and it's not like it was packed everywhere else. So you can't go on a StubHub and buy a cheap ticket. You can't go on a Craigslist and buy a cheap ticket. Looking on there, it's just bone dry. There's nothing there.
Well, apparently not completely bone dry.
So I'm checking Craigslist and nonstop, looking for somebody with cheap tickets, right? And an official Fabulous Pelton Cast shout out to phone number 4.
Are we sure we should be giving out just a random phone number on the air? That seems like a bad idea.
Okay. Well, it'll be fine. Nobody's going to know.
can I block out, like, part of it? Like,
sure, sure. The last 4 digits.
Okay.
I didn't catch the person's name, but they posted onto Craigslist that they had 2 free tickets and weren't going to the game and you could come and grab them. So I texted him immediately and went and picked up those free tickets, and boom, I'm at the game for free. So thank you to that one kind sir. No thank you to the Husky basketball office.
And free was a lot to pay for Saturday's game, I think. No, I mean, I wasn't surprised by the outcome. Cal's a bad matchup for the Huskies, as we talked about. A lot of size in the front court. And I just think they're generally a pretty good team that has gone through a rough stretch lately. So I wasn't disappointed about the outcome of the weekend.
Being at the game was very disappointing because, I mean, I expected to lose, right? But Cal did not play well in that game. There was really no stretch where it's like, wow, Cal's playing really good basketball. The Huskies played so poorly, especially offensively, and they were missing open shots. CJ Wilcox has just completely disappeared. I don't know what's going on with CJ Wilcox. I was saying that if he wants to be an NBA player and can't make it through a 20-game college season without getting tired, he has no chance of going through an 82-game season.
That's true, although he's playing, you know, upwards of 35 minutes a game on a consistent basis, and that's not something he'll be doing in the NBA because he'll be playing a smaller role off the bench. I mean, I think that the hope going into this season was that the Huskies would be able to avoid this kind of thing with Wilcox in particular because of their improved depth on the perimeter. Having to play Mike Anderson up front and the fact that, frankly, he hasn't proven as good a shooter as I think everyone hoped, and Darren Johnson defensively has been a little bit behind schedule, has meant that there hasn't been that kind of depth, and they've been totally reliant on Wilcox.
It's true, and they also were really reliant on the three in this game, which they had a lot of open looks and missed a lot of open looks.
Well, if you can't make them, you're going to get a lot of open looks because people are going to be packing the paint
on you. But they also got open looks in the paint, too. Paris Blackwell had a lot of really
good
open shots in the paint that he couldn't hit. Paris Blackwell is about 1.5 to 2 inches too short.
Yeah, it's just, you see the difference between the West Coast Conference and the Pac-12. If you look at his numbers in non-conference play and then in conference play, night and day different.
He's this close to being a really good college basketball player.
Yep.
I'm holding my fingers out. It's 2 extra inches.
Yep.
They had all these open shots. Cal was giving them opportunities on both ends, and the Huskies just could not capitalize on those opportunities.
I mean, it is disappointing that the way the weekend played out, because you had the high of beating Stanford, one of the better wins of the year on Wednesday, and then kind of that got lost in what happened on Saturday. Ultimately, you come out of it, you needed a split in that. You know, the goal in my mind all along, has been to get to 500 in conference. I think that'd be a pretty good accomplishment for this team without Jannard Giroux and, you know, with their lack of size in the front court. So right now, you've got USC and Wazoo at home that you would hope are going to be wins. So you need to steal one other game, either UCLA at home in the home finale, or one this weekend going to Oregon and Oregon State.
Yeah, there's definitely a possibility of getting to 500. A couple weeks ago, you called it miraculous, right? And
I think I said at the start of the season, I would have said it was
miraculous.
You would
have said that was miraculous. Yeah. But there's definitely, I think there's a pretty good shot of getting 500.
I mean, I think that because if you look at the projections on KenPom.com, they don't regard either the USC or Wazoo games as gimmies.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's only around 80% chance of winning each of those games. So it's still 8-10 is the most likely conference
but
record.
But they've played well at home. I wouldn't be shocked if they beat UCLA at home.
No, I wouldn't be stunned either.
Especially if Wilcox can get some of his rhythm back and start hitting shots. I mean, that really still is. I was kind of shocked that they won the game on Wednesday with Wilcox playing poorly.
Absolutely. I mean, he's such a key part of the offense. So he's going to need to step up, I think. I don't feel real good about Wednesday night at Oregon. Oregon, obviously, struggling in conference play. Their record is, you know, not what anybody expected, but they're still a very good team, and their point differential is a lot better than their record looks.
I mean, that's a winnable game. They're both winnable games, right?
Oregon State in particular, I think you have to point to, is the game that is probably your best chance of getting that win you need to get to 9 wins. But Oregon State, over the course of Pac-12 play, has been better than UW.
It really is one of those weekends where it's wide open. You're probably most likely to lose both.
Yeah.
But you have a chance to win both and a pretty good chance to split, right?
I don't know. I would say there's at least a 50% chance of going 0-2, maybe 60%.
And like a 30% chance of splitting, 40%
yeah.
chance of splitting.
I'd say maybe 10% chance of sweeping, 60% chance of getting swept, and a 30% chance
that
of coming
seems about
away
right
with one
to me. One other thing that I wanted to talk about being at the game was how bad the atmosphere is among the student section and the dog pack.
That was probably their worst showing of the year. I don't know if everyone was hungover from Friday night or what it was.
I mean, we're coming off of a pretty good win against Stanford.
A win that ended up being on ESPN because of Duke, North Carolina getting snowed out.
And there's a chance to go above 500 in conference. It would have been a big win for them.
Yeah.
Right? And the dog pack had, as far as standing active dog pack fans, maybe 100 people.
Yeah, it looked like not even the entire middle section, which usually you can count
no,
on.
No, definitely not the entire middle section. And then there's three sections of the dog pack. There's the one behind the Husky bench, the one behind the opposing bench, and then the middle section, which is usually the main section. And that was pretty full, but even the like kind of outliers of that, people weren't standing and cheering. And then behind each of the benches, there's basically no one. And there are clearly people who are not students, you know, who are very aged in those sections. What is going on? And then they also reserve, I believe, the top three rows around the arena for students.
Just on the far side.
And those are deserted.
Yeah, no.
There's not a student for miles. Students are getting cheap tickets. I don't know what they cost these days, but it's no more than a couple dollars a game, maybe $5 a game or something in that range. And the team is not a terrible team. What is going on with these students? Why are they so uninterested in this?
I mean, I think that, you know, expectations have changed. I mean, when I was in college and going to most games as a member of the dog pack, although sometimes I'd sit up high, I didn't really want to be too close. But, like, you could, first off, my first 2 years under Bender, you could walk in right before tip-off most games and just sit behind the UW bench.
Mm-hmm.
It was that empty in the dog pack. But these were teams that were going, you know, 4-14, 5-13 in conference, just completely overmatched. These are not good teams by any stretch of the imagination, but they're not bad teams either.
It's a very, very strange phenomenon. I mean, obviously it changed in the time period from when you went to college and when I did. I was there during the peak of Husky basketball. My first year at UW was the year after they were number one seed. They had Brandon Roy, big game, Brandon Roy against Adam Morrison at Gonzaga, and a lot of big games, right? But it still should have carried over. You would have thought that they would have developed some sort of culture during that time period that would still be existing. Not basically all they developed during that time period was expectations
exactly.
that they can't meet.
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of typical of Seattle sports. We know that Seattle sports fans are very excited and passionate when their teams are good, and not passionate at all when their teams are bad.
I mean, I think that probably carries over for most cities.
But there's been studies about this. I think they studied baseball attendance, and the correlation between team success and attendance was highest with the Mariners of any baseball team. I think that's what I saw.
Really, I wonder if that happens in football. I feel like there's a certain pride that we take in football, whether the team is winning or losing, in being loud. Even during the Jim Morris season with the Seahawks, it was still loud there, and that was a pretty bad stretch.
It's tough to tell how long you'd have to be not good, not competitive for the Seahawks to kind of lose that
edge. It would
have
to be a long time. Yeah. And I mean, also, you're coming off of a similar situation where they reached the highest point, higher than Husky basketball ever reached, because they went to a Super Bowl, and then were pretty bad for three seasons in there, culminating in Jim Mora. And then the crowd was still loud during that season. We were still the 12th man, still prided ourselves in the amount of false starts opposing teams had. And with Husky basketball, that hasn't happened at all. It might be that college students are fickle, and there might be a lot of college students who are not from, they're not coming to UW because of the basketball team,
mm-hmm.
you know, and a lot are not maybe even from the Seattle area.
Yeah, I don't have a good answer for it. I mean, I think that, you know, in general, the late starts or the early starts or whatever has
These
not...
are two primo start times this weekend. I mean, it's a Saturday, it's not finals, there's nothing going on. You're playing against a team in Calhoun, it's not like...
I mean, maybe everyone was at home watching the D-League All-Star game.
The D-League dunk contest. I regret not watching that. It would have been a hell of a lot more fun than watching this game. But it was not a great experience. But I did keep my promise to the Fabulous Peltoncast listeners.
You should take a Tristan promise on the Fabulous Peltoncast to the bank. But yeah, Saturday does not have me real excited about the promise of driving 2 hours to go to the Oregon State game on Saturday when I'm down in Portland.
So you're going
to
be seeing the Huskies on the road.
And it's the first time I've ever been to another Pac-12 venue. When I went to Madison Square Garden earlier this year, it was the first time I'd ever seen UW play outside of Seattle. So it'll be interesting to compare and contrast what it's like at Gill Coliseum. See Gary Payton's retired jersey over there.
That'll be really interesting.
Yeah.
I'm curious what the crowd is going to be like there. Because there's got to be some excitement around the Oregon State
program,
right?
You would think so. This is probably their best team in two decades.
Really?
Yeah.
Since Gary Payton?
I think they had one good year after Payton left.
Brett Berry.
No. Just like the year after Payton left, the next season they were still competitive. And since then, I don't think they finished 500 in Pac-12 play.
Interesting. So you're just going to that, but you're obviously not driving to Eugene because that's way too far.
Well, they play on Wednesday night opposite Blazers San Antonio, so I'll be at that game instead. I wish if it had been Thursday night, I probably would have gone to both of them.
And you're taking in a lot of basketball this weekend. This week.
Is that any different? It's just a lot more in-person basketball.
In-person basketball.
Yeah.
But I'm very disappointed in the Husky basketball program. It's not an experience that I want to experience again anytime this year. I had the thought, you know, I got...
You said like you were in a hostage situation.
Yeah.
It's not an experience I want to go through again.
It kind of felt like, and I had to work really hard to get these tickets also. At least I went for free. I got free parking and free tickets, and I still had a bad time. Imagine how bad it would have been had I paid $60 to be there. I would have rioted.
I mean, I don't think you can complain about the students for not being there. I mean, obviously, they don't have to go through as much work to walk across campus to get there, but...
The price point is the only issue. If the Husky basketball tickets were $10 a game and could buy season tickets, I would buy season tickets.
Okay.
So...
Well, there's another official Fabulous Peltoncast promise.
Yes, Husky basketball.
If they change
Hop to it. All the seats at the top should have been $5. If you have excess inventory a few days before the game, you've got to get rid of those.
I mean, there's a little bit of difficulty. Having worked for basketball teams, have experienced this discussion, not really necessarily participated in it, but I know what it's like. You don't want to undercut the value that you're giving to your core fans and your season ticket holders by going too cheap. But I think that there is a happy medium that can be struck.
Absolutely.
So, thus concludes our Husky Ticket Pricing Model podcast.
I could do a lot on Husky Ticket Pricing Models.
I don't doubt that you could.
Including football, too. I mean, I guess it was interesting to think really quick, this is the last thought that I have, about how the Husky football fan, or student section, there's not really a name for it, the Husky football student section, even in the lowest of lows, still came out pretty good. They were still always the loudest people there, and it was pretty full, even in the 0-12 season.
I mean, I think that's the difference to some extent between football and basketball. Like, the football games are an event in and of themselves.
It's fun to go to.
I guess what I'm saying here is that people need to start tailgating Husky basketball games.
You,
I saw some
you
Oregon
took a photo,
State fans yeah, doing that before they played up here.
You're going to have to report back if Oregon State is full of people tailgating.
Wouldn't that be great if it was?
That would be kind of an awesome culture that they
have. I don't
have.
Think I'm getting down there early enough that I will really be able to tell, sadly. But I will, if I see any grills and canopies out there, I'll pass it along. All right, well, thanks for listening.
Thank you.